Good afternoon. There's just something about Sabbath, isn't there? There's something about Sabbath and all of us gathering together to sing, to pray, to listen to Scripture, just being together. There's something about Sabbath and what we do here that's just like different than any other day. Don't you feel that way? All right? You just want to kind of like box it. In fact, I've got this wonderful selfie stick here. I really want to remember this beautiful Sabbath moment here, so thank you, Rama, for the selfie stick. I'm not vain enough to own one. So let's just do this. So everybody, let's smile. That's not, come on, be happy, it's Sabbath. Yeah, okay, here we go. Whoop. I cannot do a pano with this thing. I don't know how to do it. So everybody, Karen, smile, here we go. Oh. Balcony, you're in. Good, yes. Haven't forgotten about this side. Okay, whoop, smile. Oh, balcony. Steve, bigger smile. Okay, that's too big. Okay, good. You must be married to a dental hygienist. We just want to capture moments so that we can sort of freeze them in time and have them to look back on and to hold on. Isn't that true? So, I read this article on BBC. It's called, Are You Taking Too Many Pictures? Do we have any picture-holics here? Selfie-holics, is that a word? It's a fascinating article. I invite you to go read it this afternoon. A study that was done by Professor Linda Henkel, a psychology professor at Fairfield University. They did this study to see, like, what is the impact of us just taking selfies all the time? Wherever we go, we just want to snap a picture, or not even take a picture of the Grand Canyon, but we wanted to take a picture of us and the Grand Canyon as though we're, like, bigger and better than the Grand Canyon. And they're like, Grand Canyon, okay, Unfortunately, I Googled last night, there are many people who've died taking selfies, but that's not the point of the sermon. So, we just want to take moments like this, and we want to, like, box it and just say, we want to hold on to it. And so this professors, they did this research study, fascinating study. They found that taking pictures can actually impair your ability to recall details of the event later on. How about that? We're all taking pictures to help us remember, and studies seem to be pointing to the fact that as we take these pictures, it's actually not helping as much as we think. Of course, it triggers some sort of memory. But what the study says is when you actually take a picture of the Grand Canyon, you're focused on your phone, and so your vision is zoomed in on the small thing. You're not taking in the big thing. If you did not have your phone, your brain, the neuroscience, forget how it all works, will actually, when you remember that again, will have better and broader and more real and authentic memories than what you see on your screen or on your big TV. Isn't that fascinating? Yet, we live in a culture, a society where everything's like, I don't know if you've seen the picture. I think Pastor Chris showed it a number of years ago, where it was the previous pope when he was, welcomed? Like, he stands on the balcony and says, hi, I'm pope now, all right? There's masses of people, and there's like one or two flip phones back in 2000, wherever it was. And then when the latest Pope Francis, when he was, there's this picture, and all you can see is cell phones in the air. Like, it's this wave of just, like, light. Wow. You see, we live in a time where we want to digitally memorialize our experiences. We want to memorialize them. Something like that is going on in Scripture in the passage that we read for the gospel. Just want to refresh your memory. So let's read together. Follow with me on the screens. In Luke chapter 9, we find the following story. Dazzling, dizzying experience. About 8 days after Jesus said these things, he took Peter, John, and James and went up to the mountain to pray. As Jesus was praying, the appearance of his face changed and his clothes flashed white like lightning. Two men, Moses and Elijah, were talking with him. They were clothed with heavenly splendor and spoke about Jesus' departure, which he would achieve in Jerusalem. Peter and those with him were almost overcome by sleep, but they managed to wake up and saw Jesus' glory as well as the two men that were with him. Wow! What a dazzling, dizzying experience for these disciples. Here's a painting by the great painter Raphael that shows Jesus and Moses and Elijah and the three disciples witnessing this event. They see this amazing thing happen. By the way, they're sort of sleeping, and it says they woke up enough to recognize the glory. And here is the next thing that happens, what we're going to focus on today. Peter says the following as he wakes up from his slumber and sees this image before him. Master, it's good that we are here. It's good. We should construct three shrines. One for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. Of course, the Bible says Peter didn't know what he was talking about. So, look at the painting. If you look at this painting, Peter was focusing on the three. Jesus, Elijah, Moses. And he's like, I want to take this experience and memorialize it. I want to take a snapshot, freeze it in time and space, and hold on to it. You know what? This is an amazing spiritual experience that happens, but Peter responds on a physical level. He says, grab a hammer and let's nail down this memory. We are going to freeze frame it and post it. Of course, there are two ways of looking at Peter's response. The first is optimistic, right? Maybe Peter is not as dumb as we think he is, right? Maybe he's not as foolish as this text appears. Maybe Peter is just awestruck. I mean, imagine seeing this vision in front of you. How else would you be but awestruck? Maybe Peter had a deep desire to celebrate Jesus as Messiah. You see, because just a couple of verses before this happened, Jesus was telling the disciples that he is going to suffer and be rejected and be on trial and die. And then Jesus turned to Peter and says, who do you say I am? And what does Peter say? You are the Messiah. And so maybe Peter comes to this moment and he's awestruck and he sees Jesus in his glory and he's like, that's it, you are the Messiah, da-da! And Peter wants to hold on to that moment and say, bah, this is it. That's the optimistic way of looking at Peter's response. The pessimistic way of looking at Peter's response would be what Stanley Hauerwas said. He says, Peter tried to secure in place, if not tied down, and domesticate the wild spirit of God's kingdom. I'll read that again. Peter wanted to secure in place the wild spirit of God's kingdom. Peter sees this glory, God's glory, and he wants to capture it. He wants to contain it. He wants to control it. Let's nail down this moment. Let's preserve this moment. It's because we as human beings are meaning makers. We're meaning seekers. We seek to make meaning. We want to hang on to our brush with a moment of glory. And so we attempt to preserve every moment. Snap, snap. But you see, the thing is, when we attempt to preserve the moment, we settle. We normalize. We make it the norm. We want it to always be this way. When we experience something of God that brings us joy and comfort and sort of sits easy in our lives, we want to take this experience, capture it, contain it, so that it becomes the experience for us, the standard experience for us. And when we settle like this, we often settle it for everybody else too. My mountaintop experience with God, I'm going to box it up. It also needs to be your mountaintop experience with God. And when we do this memorializing of these moments, it becomes more about my God than the God of the Scriptures. We take our view of God, we freeze frame it, and we box God into that view. And in some ways, then, if we do this, we make God into our image rather than being created in the image of God. But that's the way of humans. We want to preserve every moment. Snap. But when we do that, we settle. The challenge is, disciples of Jesus are pilgrims, not settlers. Disciples of Jesus are pilgrims, not settlers. Peter was so caught up in the vision that he failed to understand that this transfiguration, what the story is called, he failed to say that this transfiguration is a journey, a pilgrimage. It is not a static experience. It is not a freeze frame. Disciples of Jesus are pilgrims. We are not settlers. Peter is so focused on what he sees that he does not hear. He does not understand. If Peter was listening to the conversation, he would hear that this is what the transfiguration conversation sounds like. Verse 9, verse 30, Moses and Elijah were talking with Jesus. They were clothed with heavenly splendor and spoke about Jesus' what? Departure, which he would achieve in Jerusalem. The fascinating thing about how we translate this, all the Bible translates this, not the best, because the Greek word for departure there is literally the word in Greek exodus. Exodus. So when we read this thing, we see that Jesus, Moses, and Elijah were talking with him. They were clothed in heavenly splendor, and they spoke about Jesus's exodus, which he would achieve in Jerusalem. See, like I said a few verses earlier, Jesus tells the disciples that he must suffer. He will be rejected. He will be killed. Then he will be raised to life. Peter says, yes, you are Messiah. But now, Peter sort of does a 180, and he's like, Peter and the others are like, well, Jesus' recent words is not something that we're really digging here about suffering and death. They were probably hoping for deliverance from, and maybe even triumph over their enemies, the Romans, maybe with a dash of revenge and a little bit of glory thrown into it. So when Peter sees this dazzling display of God's glory, of Jesus' glory, he wants to freeze frame this experience, wrap it up, tie it with a ribbon, and settle it. But Luke tells us that Jesus is on a journey. He is on an exodus to and through the way of the cross. From the Mount of Transfiguration stretches the way of Jesus. A journey of liberation from what oppresses us. A journey from what we know into something unknown. A journey across the seas of chaos into new creation. A journey from death to life. Jesus' exodus is fraught with pain and rejection and death. This is a mountaintop experience, but not the kind of mountaintop experience where you glowingly write about sunrise and soft breezes and warm friends and music in the air and quiet times. On this mountaintop experience, the subject is death and the way of the cross. What's interesting is that this moment of dazzling glory does not come at the end of the gospel, but right here in the middle of the Gospel of Luke. It is not the climactic moment where Jesus' true nature is decidedly revealed at the end. That actually happens at the cross. But no, transfiguration happens in the very middle of the Gospel of Luke. It is, in fact, the pivot point in the Gospel of Luke. Up to this point, from Luke chapter 1 up until 9, Jesus had been doing his Galilean ministry. Jesus was called by God, the chosen. He preached, he healed, he taught. He was teaching people about the kingdom of God. The transfiguration happens. And from this point forward, the Gospel of Luke pivots to the cross. In fact, in verse 52, it says, Jesus set his face towards Jerusalem, makes his way to the cross. Transfigurations aren't exits. Transfigurations aren't final destinations. Transfigurations are exoduses. On the mountaintop, Jesus has not arrived, he's on his way. Jesus is a pilgrim, not a settler. Disciples journey, we don't settle. Of course, they built a church on the mount. Peter won. He's way won. Because this is what human nature does. We want to package it and settle it and hold on to it. And today you can go there if that is the place. So what do we do? Well, at least we have the comfort and perhaps the correction of the Bible that reports that Peter didn't have a clue what he was talking about. Probably the best verse in Luke. What happens next? So, verse 9, chapter 9, verse 34. Peter was still speaking when a cloud overshadowed him. Like, Peter is saying, like, let's build it. Cloud comes. And they entered into the cloud. They were overcome with awe. Then the voice from the cloud said, this is my son, my chosen one. Listen to him. And even as the voice spoke, Jesus was found alone. They're gone. The disciples were speechless and at the time told no one what they had seen. As quickly as this vision appeared, it's over. But it's not over before we have a word from God. Thanks be to God. God gives a simple instruction. This is my son. Listen to him. Because Peter got the whole picture so wrong, God directs Peter and the other disciples to listen to him. See, Peter got it all wrong. If you look at the painting again, like, Peter got it all wrong because he zoomed in on this one experience of the transfiguration and made that the whole. He was so focused and zoomed on this dazzling experience that he failed to see the bigger picture, the complete picture. Because you see, transfiguration is a story that continues. It doesn't stop. It's not static. It moves like we had said. It's an exodus. What's fascinating about this transfiguration narrative is that in the synoptic gospels, that is Matthew, Mark, and Luke, in all three of the gospels where the transfiguration happens, the very next story is the same in all three of the gospels. They have their order for many things different. But in this case, all three of the authors put the transfiguration and the next verses together, which leads me to think that these are intertwined and connected in a profound way. This is what comes after this experience. Chapter 9, verse 37. The next day, when Jesus, Peter, John, and James had come down from the mountain, a large crowd met Jesus. A man from the crowd shouted, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son, my only son. Look, a spirit seized him, and without any warning, he screams. It shakes him and causes him to foam at the mouth. It tortures him and rarely leaves him alone. I begged your disciples to throw it out, but they couldn't." Jesus answered, "You faithless and crooked generation, how long will I be with you and put up with you? Bring your son here." While he was coming, the demon threw him down and shook him violently. Jesus spoke harshly to the unclean spirit, healed the child, and gave him back to his father. Everyone was, there's that word again, overwhelmed by God's greatness. See, there's more to the picture than just what Peter had focused on. Peter had focused on Jesus, Moses, and Elijah. He was so zoomed in on the mountain and this dazzling experience that he forgot about the valley. It is human nature for us to want to zoom in and focus on the things that brings us comfort, makes us feel good, and helps us settle, even to the point that we believe that this thing we zoomed in on is the whole. The best way I can think to explain it to you is through Instagram. Who has an Instagram account here? I asked 9:30, I think there were two people, and half of the people didn't know what Instagram was. Praise be to God that we're in an audience who knows about Instagram. In fact, you can Instagram this if you want. No. So, there's this artist who was looking at Instagram pictures, and we all know that Instagram pictures, we all put these things because we want to hold on to these things, moments, and capture them and share them with our friends, mainly to make ourselves feel good because they'll like it or heart it or whatever it is on Instagram, right? So, artist, a photographer put this together. This is really the reality of Instagram. Look at this first picture. So there is BBK Sports Club. This is in Bangkok, I think. And as you can see, there's like this beautiful picture. There's nobody else in the picture on Instagram because, yeah, snap, freeze, this is me with my beautiful tennis. So but there's all the other people playing on the side. It's not the complete picture. If you go to the next slide, you see somebody is doing gardening. I don't know how well you can see it up there, but they have this beautiful piece with like this wood, and their little garden looks perfect. But when you look at the big picture, it's a mess. But yeah, you upload it and like. You're awesome. Look at the next one. This person puts there like going on a bike ride. It's so peaceful and quiet with 400 other people walking beside you. But that's not what matters, because we want to take this moment. We're meaning makers, and we take this thing and say, we're going to hold on to this moment and look at the next one. Somebody that is wanting to say that they're eating awesome food, but on the side you see ramen noodles and some egg stuff, and I mean, it looks disgusting. But what they're posting is this thing, right? Look at the next one. It's up in the city, and I think it actually says that, like, the thing says, my sky. My beautiful sky with an antenna and like some water heaters and stuff and like terrible city around me, but oh, look how beautiful it is. Snap, freeze. Look at the next one. Yep, I'm doing yoga this morning, and I am awesome. I can do a headstand all by myself on an inclined grass at a 45-degree angle, but my friend is holding my feet. But you know, I want to hold on to this moment and tell people how great this is. And here's the last one. Somebody sitting at the beach, and they're having like this beautiful time in Samui Island, and you see this peaceful, like beautiful picture of this girl looking at the ocean. It's fantastic. And then you see, oh, there's kids playing, there's people around. If Peter had Instagram, this is what his snapshot would look like. Boom! But the reality is that he failed to get the full picture. If you look at the true painting from Raphael, you will see that Peter did not have the full picture. He cared about one moment that he wanted to capture, to take and make it his own and make that the norm at the expense of everything else. See, Raphael painted this picture. He first painted this, by the way, with just the picture at the top. But if you go to the bottom part, Cheryl, we'll zoom in a little more. You see that the story of the boy with the demon that is being healed by Jesus, you have the disciples and the crowd and the boy and everything there. He added this when he learned more about this passage, if you look at this. So if you go back to the picture, it is one picture. It is one account. It is one story. The transfiguration and the demonia, the boy with the demon in him and the healing is one story. All three Gospels tells it exactly the same way. You see, because faithfulness is not achieved by freezing the moment. Faithfulness is not achieved by freezing the moment. Faithfulness follows God and God's movement towards the future. Jesus doesn't linger on this dazzling mountain and this wonderful, he doesn't linger at the transfiguration. He keeps moving down to the valley. At the transfiguration, Jesus learns, perhaps for the first time, that there is more to him than that he has known up until this time. And yet, Jesus remains compassionate about our human messes. He doesn't abandon us for happier days with Moses and Elijah. He returns to the confusion of our lost lives, leading us to discover who we can become when we try to be faithful, rather than wanting to be happy all the time. The danger is that when we settle in moments of God's blessing, and when we do that, we avoid the ongoing, cross-carrying Exodus journey that is the life of the disciple. We have choices about how we respond to mountaintop transfiguration events in our lives. We have a choice. We can ruin these experiences with what I call if-onlys. Maybe you're like me, but I'm like, if only I could stay here longer. If only things would never change. Or if only things would remain the same. If only I could relive that experience. What if we can reminisce about our experiences, caressing and massaging our experiences as an excuse to disengage from the world? Or we can allow these experiences to prepare us for what God is doing next. And what does God call Jesus to do next? Transfiguration, go to the valley, set your eyes on Jerusalem, and go to the cross. See, there are two beloved sons in this story. There is a beloved son, the one who is chosen, the one on the mountain, the one that is going on an exodus, the one we listen to, the one who is dazzling in all his glory. But there is another beloved son. In fact, the father says to Jesus, "This is my one and only son," the same words that are used for Jesus' baptism. There's one son, Jesus, there's another son who is captive to disease. But Jesus leaves the glory of the mountaintop to bring glory to the Son on earth. Because like Irenaeus once said, the glory of God is a human being fully alive. Jesus is not selfish. Jesus is selfless. Jesus does not settle. Jesus is on the move. Jesus does not come to lift people to that higher level of mountaintop experiences, no. Rather, the mountaintop experiences enable us to understand the God of the dust down where life happens. The Christian life is full of mountaintop experiences. It's tempting to want our religious journeys, our spiritual experiences, to be made up solely of such moments, bypassing the chaos, the challenge, the struggle. In our mountaintop moments, something inside us cries out, just like Peter, "It's good for me to be here. Let's just bask in the glory of this place a little longer. Let's build ourselves around this moment and enshrine it. Let's freeze frame it." There's a saying that says, life is not measured by the number of breaths you take, but life is measured by the moments that take your breath away. This may be true to some degree, but it is also true that life, and especially the life of a Christian, a follower of Jesus, continually calls us down from those breathtaking moments, down from the mountaintop. We are called to descend from the moments of glory and celebration and joy and what all into the valleys of this world where life is messy and challenging and beautiful. Transfiguration is not settling, it is moving. We've sort of used the metaphor of pictures, photographs, painting, as we talk about the transfiguration. The best way I could find to sort of wrap this up is with this awesome TED Talk that was given in 2012 by a man named Cesar Kuriyama. Rather than having freeze frames and capturing moments, what he decided to do is for 1 year, he started a new project and he called it 1 second every day. He did take his cell phone to remember things, but instead of taking a freeze frame, he recorded 1 second of video, 1 second of movement in his life. Not a freeze frame, not a settling moment, but movement, 1 second. When I first heard about this, like, 1 second is not a lot. This is probably going to be fairly boring. It is amazing the difference when you capture your life through freeze frames and the difference it makes when you take a video, a 1 second video of movement. So there are lots of parallels you can draw from this. I'll let you think about it, about transfiguration and not being settlers, but pilgrims, being on the move as you listen to this edited TED Talk.
So the first of those projects ended up being something I called 1 second every day. Basically, I'm recording 1 second of every day of my life for the rest of my life. chronologically compiling these 1 second tiny slices of my life into one single continuous video until, you know, I can't record them anymore. The purpose of this project is, one, I hate not remembering things that I've done in the past. There's all these things that I've done with my life that I have no recollection of, unless someone brings it up, and sometimes I think, oh yeah, that's something that I, you know, did. And something that I realized early on in the project was that if I wasn't doing anything interesting, I would probably forget to record the video. This has really invigorated me day to day when I wake up to try and do something interesting with my day. It's also kind of a protest, personal protest, against the culture we have now where people just are at concerts with their cell phones out recording the whole concert and they're disturbing you. They're not even enjoying the show, they're watching the concert through their cell phone. I hate that. I admittedly used to be that guy a little bit back in the day, and I've decided that the best way for me to still capture and keep a visual memory of my life and not be that person is to just record that 1 second that will allow me to trigger that memory of, yeah, that concert was amazing. I really loved that concert. This really tragic thing happened where my sister-in-law, her intestines suddenly strangled one day. And we took her to the emergency room, and she was in really bad shape. We almost lost her a couple of times, and I was there with, you know, my brother every day. And it helped me realize something else during this project is that, you know, recording that 1 second on a really bad day is extremely difficult. It's not, we tend to take our cameras out when we're doing awesome things, or we're, oh yeah, this party, let me take a picture. But we rarely do that when we're having a bad day and something horrible is happening. And I found that it's actually been very, very important to record even just that 1 second of a really bad moment. Now, one of the things that I do is I don't use any filters. I don't use anything to... I try to capture the moment as much as possible as the way that I saw it with my own eyes. I started a rule of first-person perspective. Early on, I think I had a couple of videos where I would, you know, you see me in it, but I realized that wasn't the way to go. The way to really remember what I saw was to record it as I actually saw it. Now, a couple of things that I have in my head about this project are, wouldn't it be interesting if thousands of people were doing this? I think it would be interesting to see what everyone did with a project like this. I think everyone would have a different interpretation of it. I think everyone would benefit from just having that 1 second to remember every day. I never want to forget another day that I've ever lived, and this is my way of doing that. And it'd be really interesting also to see if you could just type in like on a website, like June 18th, 2018, and you would just see a stream of people's lives on that particular day from all over the world. And I don't know, I think this project has a lot of possibilities, and I encourage you all to record just a small snippet of your life every day so you can never forget it that day you lived. Thank you.
I tell you, the difference between a freeze frame and a 1 second a day moving clip, the difference between Peter before the cross and the Peter we have to thank for you and me sitting here today. Friends, let's not settle. Let's not stay on our mountaintops. Let's have transfigurations. Moving with a God who is on the move, exodusing to and through the cross to the glory of God. Amen.